Next case for argument, Grigsby v. LaHood. Mr. Kendall.
I'm here.
Right, this is our telephone argument. Okay, Mr. Grigsby, you're on.
I would like to begin by thanking...
I'm not Mr. Grigsby, I'm sorry.
Mr. Kendall.
Mr. Kendall. Confused you with your client.
That's all right. I do myself sometimes. Well, I'd like to thank the court, Judge Posner, Judge Caney, and Judge Wood, for allowing me to do this by telephone.
Oh, that's fine.
I would also like to thank Ms. Richards for agreeing. Mr. Grigsby worked for the FAA for 14 years. From 1991 to 1997, he worked in Indianapolis, and from 1997 to 2005, he worked in Terre Haute. During those years, he was an air traffic controller. There was a reduction in force in 2005, and he was going to be let go because part of the Terre Haute operation, or all of it, was going to be privatized. There were four vacancies in Indianapolis that were posted through the Great Lakes office of the FAA out of the DePlane office. The agency posted those positions nationally, and they listed as the criteria for those four positions, as the minimum criteria to apply, that you either have worked in a regional office for 1 year, or you were fully rated and certified.
So, Mr. Kendall, this is Judge Wood. Let me, as if you couldn't tell, let me ask you this. I find it hard, both in light of the law and in light of just common sense, to think that just because somebody meets the minimum qualifications for submitting a bid for a position, the hiring entity can't itself impose a higher level of qualifications. And if they get enough applicants who meet those higher qualifications, restrict hiring to those people. Now, they don't know ex ante whether they're going to get a pool that covers their desired level, which would explain the minimum qualifications. But in this case, there's no dispute that Mr. Grigsby never was certified as a CPC. And why isn't this simply a case where the FAA was hoping to and, in fact, did get the more qualified people?
That's a very good question, Judge. I think that there are three answers to that. I think the first answer is the FAA, in posting the job criteria, screened out quite a few people already. They screened out to just qualified, then best qualified. And then the local entity imposed testing criteria, and he scored higher than two of the applicants for one of the positions, eight of the applicants for another position.
But all of that being said, he wasn't certified as a CPC, and the people who were hired for each of these positions were. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
What evidence is there in the record to suggest that this was not a bona fide qualification for the FAA?
I think there are a couple. One is that the FAA itself doesn't require it. That's why they provide for the ability to recertify. Secondly, because he's not certified as a CPC, he was certified in a previous facility and certified earlier in Indianapolis. It's just that right that day at that facility, at those seven radar sites, he hadn't been recertified on those sites, so he wouldn't have been certified for new. The effect of this self-imposed rule by the local facility was discriminatory, because what it meant was if you weren't already working at Indianapolis, you couldn't get the job. And so it eliminated.
Why does that mean it's discriminatory on the basis of national origin?
It had a discriminatory effect because there were no Native Americans.
Right, but that's an impact claim. That's not a disparate treatment claim.
That's correct. It's also not a criteria set forth by the agency. And one of the four jobs, the supervisor specialist, That had no criteria for it, and the management position and the operations specialist didn't even require him to remain certified. So he could have, any of those people could have dropped their certification and remained in those positions after that. This was a purely arbitrary criteria imposed by the local facility that wasn't in the national guidelines, and they ignored their own procedures they set up. They set up an interview process in which he was recommended as the best qualified and ignored that. They set up testing, and he out-tested all of these other people. So all they had left were undocumented, non-standardized, local criteria that they imposed. And I don't think that it's a slam dunk that they were discriminating, but I don't think it's a slam dunk that they weren't. In other words, I think that the question of fact here for a jury is, given the fact that you had all of this criteria that he met, and given the fact that he was recommended by the interview panel, and given the fact that he tested better than any of the, some of the applicants for all positions who were chosen over him, then how do you explain that you decided to impose these two things, one of which was he was fresher? They say two.
Did the person who made the ultimate hiring decision, was that person aware of his identity?
He says he was not. However, the person who advised him of this, of who to take, Hughes, and made up the questions for the interview panel that he did so well on, was aware of it and blanched when he told her that he was Native American.
But also, when did she become aware of it? I thought it was after some of these interviews.
No, she became aware of it before, well, she became aware of it before the decision was made.
But after the interviews, right?
I don't think she became aware of it after the interview for the operations specialist one, which is the one they had the interview for. That's the only job they did interview for, and he passed it. None of these positions are actually involves the primary responsibility doing CPC work.
But that the judge finds that you had that the local, that Indianapolis wanted them to keep their hand in, if you will, by spending 8 hours or so a month doing the air traffic control job.
Yeah. He could have done that on radar by radar. We're talking about apples and oranges. He just needed to qualify on any one radar out of seven areas. At that point, he would have been able to complete his 8 hours and supervise. To follow up on another question that was asked earlier, and I'm not sure if it was Judge Posner or Judge Kaney, all his applications had that he was of Native American national origin.
But that was in the Illinois facility. The government presented evidence that said it never was sent over to Indianapolis.
Yes.
Do you have evidence to the contrary?
No. I don't know if it was sent over or not. I don't. But the people in Indianapolis knew he was Native American. You could tell when you saw him that he was Native American. And
that's a very strange part of this whole case, I have to say. That exchange with the administrative law judge and the fact that he doesn't realize he's Native American until he's 26 years old or so. I mean, I'm not sure it's of any legal relevance, but it's a very odd aspect.
Is there a photograph of him in the record?
No, there is no photograph of him in the record. There is, though, that exchange between the attorney for the FAA and Judge Moma at the hearing in which he starts asserting he's not. I think... I don't know if I've answered all the questions, but I'm probably about out of my time, so I don't have a red light in front of me. But I'm going to...
Oh, you have about a minute left, so you want to reserve that for rebuttal? Minute?
Sure,
or 2 minutes?
You.
Does he have 2 minutes or 1 minute? 1 minute. Okay, so we'll hear from Ms. Richards.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, if it please the Court. My name is Deborah Richards, and I'm an Assistant United States Attorney representing the Secretary of the Department of Transportation in this case. Mr. Grigsby was not now and was not in 2005 a fully certified professional controller or CPC. He did not have any experience.
Record show about whether the person who made the appointment was aware of his identity.
The record shows that Mr. Boone, who is the selecting official for the positions and the signatory authority for the traffic management coordinator, did not know of his Native American heritage.
What about the person who made the recommendation?
Ms. Hughes made recommendations regarding the support specialist position, and Mr. Grigsby did tell her that he was of Native American heritage. But there's no evidence that she ever gave that information to Mr. Boone.
No, but she might have been influenced in making the recommendation by her knowledge.
There's no evidence of that. In fact, she did not provide any misinformation to Mr. Boone. She did not provide any or withhold any information to Mr. Boone in making his decision. And the evidence is that Mr. Boone made his decision based upon information from Ms. Hughes, as well as information he gained from the applications and other managers.
Work. What exactly is that? I couldn't figure that out.
A fully certified professional controller. That is
what it stands for. But what is it that what does that certification add? He had done controller work, right?
No, he had not. He was in the Developmental Air Traffic Control Program, and he withdrew in 1997, 7 years before he applied for these supervisory positions over the air traffic controllers. He did not finish that.
He was never an air traffic controller?
No, he was a developmental air traffic controller. And at that time, he completed 2 of 6 radar positions and was certified. But after that was in 1997, after that, the Indianapolis Center.
Air traffic controller. He'd passed the tests. Is that what you're saying?
He was not certified at the time he applied at all.
He had that certification earlier?
He did for 2 of the radar positions. But in 2000.
But you're saying he had 4 more tests he had to pass before he could be an air traffic controller?
Before he was fully certified and could work unsupervised. And after that time, the Indianapolis Center underwent massive changes in both the workstation that the controllers would sit at and how the information was provided to them. There was just a drastic changes within their infrastructure, their equipment, and their procedures, all of which would have been very new to Mr. Grigsby. And the evidence.
But it's odd that the certification wasn't required. So you can teach air traffic control without having ever done it yourself? Is that?
No, that is not so.
Well, why didn't the people in Illinois say that being a certified traffic controller was a prerequisite for these positions?
They did on the support specialist position. And that's
but
what
they
the
didn't
term
for some of the other positions. One of the positions, it was Mr. Boone who decided he wanted to add that requirement.
That's the support specialist position. And Mr. Boone, as the air traffic manager, had the discretion to make the determination as to whether support specialist positions should be required to be operational currency, to have operational currency, and he decided that.
What is the exact job that he would have been that's an issue here? What would he have been doing if he'd gotten this job?
Duties themselves required for each of those positions required.
There are 4 jobs, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
2 are operational supervisors, one of which was only 4 months in length, a period of time not to exceed 4 months in length. One was.
For what? Operational.
Operations supervisor.
What does that mean?
That's the first line supervisor for the air traffic controllers in this operational area that would have responsibility for.
So someone can supervise air traffic controllers even though he's never been an air traffic controller?
That would be the problem for Mr.
No,
Mr.
but
Grimsby.
Apparently that's possible, right?
No, it's not.
He could have gotten this job.
No, it's not possible because FAA directive itself, which is located at page 90.
I thought the parties had agreed that it was not a mandatory requirement, just something might be desirable.
No, it was mandatory. It was mandatory.
It depends on the job. It was desirable, I thought, for the support specialist, but mandatory for operations?
And it became mandatory for this support specialist because the air traffic manager had the discretion to determine that, which he did determine it was necessary. It was mandatory for the traffic management coordinators and mandatory for the operations supervisor.
So these are the people who sit there and watch the blips on the, you know, and tell the planes it's okay to land now or there's somebody, you know, too close to you or all those
yes.
things. Yeah.
These are the people who are responsible
what
for separating 6 million aircraft.
What does this support specialist do?
The support specialist position would be have duties responsible for the tactical and strategic support of multiple program areas.
What does that mean? That's just bureaucratic gibberish.
Traffic management. They would be responsible for that. Quality assurance in the work that they did.
Traffic management, that's what the controller does. What does the support specialist do?
The support specialist may be in charge of making sure that traffic management is efficiently and effectively done.
Sound like a support specialist. That sounds like a supervisor. So what's a support specialist?
This is a supervisory type position. This is not a specialist or administrative type position. They are required to maintain their currency to work the radars.
What does a support specialist do?
It would depend on the area that they were assigned, but they could be assigned to traffic management, to airspace and procedures on how those are implemented by the air traffic controllers.
An advisor of some sort? An advisor?
They do. They might do that, but they are also...
So are those the people who say, you know, the weather looks miserable in Indianapolis, we're going to have a slowdown of the number of planes that come in, or what...
The support specialist may do very many of those type of jobs. They are not the same as what is done at automatic.
Sound like a support specialist? It doesn't sound like support. That sounds like traffic management. Sounds like being a controller.
They do have to act as a controller.
Sounds like, you know, buying the paper clips or what have you, or maintaining the radars.
Well, the title is what the title is. It may be.
Nice to know what the job is rather than what the title is.
But the vacancy announcement itself...
They don't have an individual screen they're looking at. They're sort of floating around within the other...
They are required to work as a air traffic controller at the radar several hours a month. And
but
that is required...
When they're doing the rest of the time, they're actually supervising people that are actually looking at the radar.
That's correct. And
this
to be able to know if
specialist?
This is the support specialist.
And you say that certification as an air traffic controller is required for this position?
It is. If you look at the
or is it just the exercise of discretion by some official has made it mandatory?
The air traffic manager for the support specialist position determined long before these announcements were let, that he wanted all of his support specialists to maintain operational currency. And it is required for the others.
By the FAA, it's just an official's decision that's the only people he wants working in this job. Is that right?
Yes, for the support specialist position. And he was given that authority by FAA directive to do that.
The hiring official... did he see these applicants personally or did he just review them on paper?
He reviewed them on paper. In fact, Mr. Grigsby himself states that Mr. Boone probably didn't even know who he was. Operational currency, which is what's at issue here, is required by the FAA directives, and there's really no question that applies to these positions. The only evidence, Mr. Grigsby...
Well, now you're changing what you're saying. Now I don't know what operational currency is, but you're saying this is required for all the positions.
It is required for all
positions. But for some of the positions, I gather it's actually required by regulation, and the other, it's a delegation to the official.
The regulation provides that authority to the air traffic manager to make that decision.
But, you know, there is a difference between a regulation and a decision by an official, right?
Yes.
Regulation presumably is not influenced by racial animus.
But you said that this decision had been made by the Indianapolis director sometime well in a year. I don't know how much before Mr. Grigsby comes on the scene had that decision been made? Like 2 years, 10 years?
I am looking to see when Mr. Boone became the air traffic manager, and I do not see that right away. It may be in his declaration. But it was made beforehand, and we know that because it was a requirement in the vacancy announcement itself for that position. So it had already been determined.
Before Mr. Grigsby or anybody else ever applied.
That's correct, because it was in the vacancy announcement itself. I see I'm out of time. If the panel has no further questions...
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Richards. So, Mr. Kendall, you have another minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, if it is not a requirement of the vacancy announcement that someone have a CPC, the FAA only requires two things that I talked about earlier.
The vacancy announcements must be in the record, though.
Yes, they are. The vacancy announcements are in the record. And if you look at tab 1 in the record, paragraphs 52 and 53, you will see that Mr. Grigsby has been an air traffic controller since day one.
But we're talking apples and oranges. There are all these bureaucratic subdivisions of air traffic controller that seem to be important somehow.
I think that's a good point, and it's been hard for me to wrap my arms around it. But basically, these three jobs for four positions are supervisory positions. And actually doing the tracking of the planes on the radar screen is a different task than any of these four jobs. All of these four jobs are managing people who do lots of other things there, including people who do that. And the support specialist position basically works on the schedules for the people that are working there, checks to make sure that they're keeping up their training, checks to make sure that they've got procedures and paperwork and protocol in place. The line supervisor, the OS position, the operational supervisor, is supervising people doing this, but again, isn't primarily doing it himself or herself. In fact, he's only required to do it 8 hours a month and pick a radar.
But it doesn't seem insane to me to think that you want the supervisors to be capable of doing all the work that the people they're supervising are responsible for.
That's true. And he's done this work before, and he's been certified to do this work
before. But apparently there are these four other tests that he never took. The judge's opinion says that it would have taken him a matter of years to have completed the training regime that's required.
Well, the factual record doesn't support that it would take years. He actually got qualified on two of those radars. What the defendant is saying in factually is that they changed their systems, and nobody who had left after 97 had worked on some of the new radars the way they divided them up. You can qualify on a radar relatively quickly to operate it under supervision. Actually qualifying for your final certification is a different thing. And he would have been able to do that, work on those individual radars at the get-go, but he wouldn't have been able to certify for a while. Now, whether it would have taken 6 months or 12 months or whatever, they've got a time limit of 36. But you didn't have to actually be a CPC to apply or get the job. All that the FAA requires is that if you're going to stay in these jobs, you eventually have to get it. And two of these positions, the traffic management coordinator, that's the head honcho who kind of watches how all of these people are doing their things, including the OS and the support specialist, he can let it lapse. And the OS, the specialist, the occupational specialist, can let it lapse even if they get it. And so the local management was adding on to the FAA regulations, and that may not prove, that doesn't prove beyond any kind of reasonable inquiry whether or not they're prejudiced, but it does raise a question as to why they're doing this, and those are factual issues for a jury. And as far as the knowledge of the decision maker...
Yes. Okay. This will have to be your last point, Mr. Kendall.
Thank you. I realize that. I appreciate it. The decision maker says he went out and talked to everybody after he got Hughes' recommendations of who to hire and not hire. Hughes' recommendations came out of the questions she wrote to the committee that recommended it. If he would talk to everybody at Indy where this guy left because they were teasing him and calling him chief, he knew the guy was an Indian. And if he didn't, then he's got constructive knowledge, and he needs to show us why he didn't find out out of the course of it. And finally, I'd just like to...
Okay, no, I think we'll have to stop now, Mr. Kendall, but thank you for your argument, and we thank Ms. Richards as well.
Thank you, and thank Ms. Richards.
Okay, our last case for argument, Gant versus...